welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Sofia. I'm your host, and I'm very excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be talking about our favorite film starring Oscar-winning actor Joaquin Phoenix. This is our 40th episode of Film Fragments. This is absolutely insane that we have reached 40 episodes. I am shocked. I am shook just thinking about it. Joaquin Phoenix, one of the most celebrated, acclaimed actors working today. Beau Is Afraid will be hitting theaters this weekend. And I couldn't have thought of a better time to talk to you guys about Joaquin Phoenix. So today I'm really excited to give you guys my top five films of this guy's wonderful career. And I'm super excited to welcome today's guest. He is the host of Two Peas on a Podcast. And just today, at the time of this recording, he has become a member of the North Carolina Film Critics Association. So first of all, congratulations to today's guest, Gerald Morris. Gerald, welcome to the show.
Brian, what's up, man? How are you? Thanks so much for having me. You were just recently on my show. You're a great dude. I've enjoyed getting to know you, and I really appreciate the invitation to be here to talk about Joaquin.
The feeling's the same. Feeling's the same, absolutely. But seriously, congratulations on this incredible, incredible honor.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I'm looking, you know, it's crazy because it's one of those weird things. Like, I'm 47 and I've been reviewing films publicly in one way or another for probably like 15 years, just kind of using my own buck to do it and my own time. And I don't know, I just kind of got this itch lately, like, let's join some associations. And there's a lot of friends and colleagues that are in these types of groups. And one of my friends kind of sponsored me and nominated me for it, and a few months later I'm in. So it's exciting, and I'm looking forward to all the different kind of access I'll get to cover some of these films. So
it's very, very exciting. They're very lucky to have you. I cannot wait to see what you pump out over there. Absolutely. And, you know, before we get into talking a little bit about yourself, I like to throw a curveball question at the start of these episodes, and I'm so eager to hear what your answer is going to be. You have the opportunity to take one Joaquin Phoenix character out to dinner, whether it's with your family, friends, or just yourself. Which character would it be and why?
Oh, wow. Man, you hit me with it. I should have been ready for this. I think it would probably be... I'm going to give away maybe one of my picks, though. But I think it would probably be Meryl from Signs.
Oh.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, kind of hearing him spin his stories from his baseball days. And also, he just seems kind of like a loyal dude, you know, like just somebody that it would be cool to rub elbows with, you know. And a lot of his characters are like that. But he also, tends to play a lot of dark characters that I don't know that I would want to be caught with at dinner. But Meryl, I feel like, is a pretty safe bet, you know? And I love that movie, so.
That's a great pick. That's a great, great pick. I was so worried you were going to pick my answer. I am going to go with Johnny from Come On, Come On. Because yeah, that is, that's, like, I just rewatched the movie last night. And, I mean, that's such a wholesome, endearing character. And plus the fact that he goes around and interviews all these kids and everything, like, as his career. I think that's such a cool job. Like, he does stuff on the radio. I would love to hear all of his stories about that. And plus, it'd be fun for him to bring his little camera and his little sound kick and just interview me and talk to me about everything. It would be a real, real delight. And yeah, it's like you said, a lot of the characters that Joaquin plays are dark and brooding and conniving and terrifying. But Johnny is so laid back and wholesome. It's like, you can't push this guy away. You can't even push him away.
That's a great answer, too, man. I mean, it's such an endearing film and such a really kind of complex but relatable character, I feel like, in that movie, which if you're going to be hanging out with somebody and kind of chatting up with them, you want it to be a relatable situation and you don't feel like you're sitting across the table from some kind of weird, brutal demon or whatever you know, Joaquin takes on sometimes.
Definitely, definitely. So before we go further into our topic, I would just love for you to talk a little bit about yourself, talk about what you do over at your podcast, talk a little bit about what got you into film. What is your journey with film? Why do you love it so much?
Well, you know, it started when I was really young. I mean, I've really always loved films my entire life, but I think it's an art form that it's you know, much like music as well, like those two things, it's just easy to connect to regardless of where you are in your life or what, you know, your stature is or your what neighborhood you live in or, you know, who you surround yourself with, what your upbringing is. You, everybody can connect through film and through music, I feel like. And I did at a young age, and my dad really instilled in me a lot of the kind of old school movie stars like Clint Eastwood, you know, was one of his all-time favorites, and John Wayne, a lot of Westerns we watched when I was a young kid. And I can just remember seeing my dad, who was a pretty distant dude, like he wasn't the kind of dad that was like, you know, all snuggly and huggy and I love you every day. You know, he was a very kind of standoffish guy and more of a strict guy. And I can remember seeing him just so enthralled with these different films that he loved, and he would be a different person. You know, like he would really kind of put his arm around me like, son, I want to show you this, you know, Clint Eastwood film or whatever. And almost like he was a part of making it, which of course he wasn't, but he just took pride in showing it to me and to my sister, my younger sister as well. And just his love of movies and how it gave us a reason to connect, which, like I said, was never something, there was really never really an opening otherwise. It was always music and movies. So the same thing could be said for like 70s rock bands and that kind of thing. Like he would put on a record and say, hey man, I want you to listen to this, you know, Boston record with me, or, you know, whatever, Bob Seger or whatever it was, kind of music he was into. So it really started with my dad at a very young age. And then as I got to college in the mid 90s, I was introduced to movies like Pulp Fiction. And that was it, man. I was locked in. I'd never seen anything like it, Quentin Tarantino. And that was the first movie that really turned me into, like, I was going to the movies every week. I was going to Blockbuster Video every week. If there was a week that went by that I didn't see two or three or four movies, there was something wrong in my life. I was watching just a ton of movies starting in the mid-90s. And it continued on from there with filmmakers like David Fincher, you know, Tarantino I mentioned, Oliver Stone I was a big fan of in the 90s. So a lot of those filmmakers I kind of gravitated towards, and it turned me into a cinephile because of the enjoyment that I got from them. And then I lost my dad in 96, so I would see some of those filmmakers and some of those actors and stuff that he never really knew, and just kind of think to myself, man, I wish I could flip the script a little bit and show him some of these guys and some of these filmmakers. And I never got a chance to do that, but I feel like he's kind of watching on my journey as well because he loved movies so much, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, my God. Well, I didn't expect to get emotional at the start of this episode. You know, I'm already still reeling over the recent episode Succession, so now I didn't expect this to happen as well.
Sure, yeah.
But no, that's beautiful. That's truly wonderful. And your podcast, you know, Chew Peas on a Podcast, how did that come about? And talk about what you do over there.
Yeah, man, you know, it's really kind of a strange story because in 2016... I don't want to get super political because I don't know your beliefs or other people that are listening to your show's beliefs, but like me and my buddy Andy, who I worked with at the time, when Trump won the election, we were like literally shocked. We were just like, what the F just happened? And we started a podcast about it because we were constantly kind of talking about where America was headed and just how surprised we were from the election and where the country was and really still is. So for the first about year and a half, we did, I don't know if you even know this, but we did like a current event show. And we just kind of covered what was going on in the world. And unfortunately, it was Trump and what was going on around him a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So as you can expect, we kind of grew weary of that after about a year and a half. And we kind of flipped it into an entertainment-focused show. And it became the top five show that it is now, which is similar to what you do. But we cover, I mean, literally anything. Like we've done our top five favorite sandwiches. We've done, you know, I mentioned music. We've done, you know, debut albums and our favorite rock bands. And obviously we do a ton of movie topics. You just came on and we did our coming of age films, for example. But we cover TV sometimes, although I don't watch as much TV now as I want to. I need to get back on the horse with that stuff. But it's basically movies for the most part. I would say probably 80% film. And then we cover a little bit of everything else in the pop culture world, just doing fun top fives.
Yeah, it's a really fun time. I had such a blast coming on your show, and I
Yeah, it
love
was great
everything that
having you,
you've
man.
been pumping out over there, all the incredible guests, some of which have been on my show as well. And
Yeah.
it's really incredible what you do over there, and I'm so glad that you keep on going. And I think it's so cool that you're not just focused on film, you also do TV, like you said, music, books, songs, whatever,
Yeah, yeah.
sandwiches. I mean, that's an incredible thing. And to get before we get into our topic, this is the last question that isn't related to Joaquin that I'm gonna ask. You go to a deli, what is your go-to sandwich? I would love to just know that. I'm a big deli sandwich guy. I just would love to know what your go-to.
I don't know if it's really considered a deli sandwich. You might have to correct me, but I'm always on the hunt for like the best BLT.
BLT,
So
okay.
anytime there's like a signature BLT on the menu at a place, like they decided to feature it, like Applewood smoked bacon or whatever the hell it is,
Yeah.
I have to try it. So I
Right.
found some good ones in my life. There's actually a local shop here in Chapel Hill close to where I live, and they're famous for their BLTs, and they have all these different ones like spicy and like Thai BLT and
Yeah.
like all this weird stuff or whatever. But I don't know, does that count? Is that okay for a deli
No, that
sandwich?
counts. That
All
counts.
right, okay.
That counts. It's yeah, mine is like a whole fiasco of a sandwich. I love going into a sandwich shop or deli. I love to get on a ciabatta. I like to get turkey, American cheese, lettuce, a little bit of mayonnaise, and some bacon.
Okay.
And I like it to be very crispy, the sandwich. It's my go-to every time I go to a sandwich shop or that. I just, that's always been my go-to. I just, love it
Sounds
so
great, man.
much. It's delicious. It's great. And one day they'll name it right after me. They're gonna do it. It's gonna happen someday. But to steer away from sandwiches and talk
Yeah.
about our topic in Joaquin Phoenix, obviously, like I said at the top, he is an incredibly prolific actor. He is celebrated. He has an eclectic filmography. Why do you think a lot of people get excited whenever they see Joaquin Phoenix's name attached to a project? And what makes you a fan of his work?
Yeah, Joaquin's an interesting actor because, when you came on my show about a month ago and we were kind of talking about doing this, there was a few topics in the mix for me to come on, and we settled on Joaquin, and I was thinking about it, and I don't know, it's interesting to me because, and I don't know if you share the sentiment, but everything he's in, even the ones that are quote unquote duds, I mean, the guy's 110%. I mean, he's always like, you can tell that it's important to him and that he's trying to do his best at his quote unquote job in that role that he may have taken on. And, he's been nominated multiple times. And I think there's a lot more successes than there are failures in his career for sure. But it's interesting to me that I never think of him as like one of my favorites, even though he is. Like, it's weird that, like Brad Pitt's one of my favorite actors. And I just inherently, that's always at the top of my mind. I just think that. But I also love Joaquin just as much, but I don't know why. Like, if somebody came up to me on the street and they're like, list your five favorite actors, I don't know that I would list Joaquin Phoenix, but he might be one of my favorites. Like, because I just am so appreciative of the performances that he turns in. I think he's known for like that weird, quirky stuff. And, we mentioned how he'll do those dark roles that a lot of other people probably don't want to touch. And obviously, independent. I mean, he hasn't done a lot of big blockbuster stuff. I mean, Joker was huge, but prior to that, he hasn't really done a lot of stuff that would, be kind of outside of that indie lane. So I just think he's a really interesting actor because he's one of the last guys working right now, at least, that you can tell it's about the script and it's about the character. It's not about the paycheck. Like, I truly believe that. Like, I think he would take a role for $100 if he thought it was like a role that he could sink his teeth into. Now, he might hear this and go, I'm not going to do anything for $100, but you just get that feeling, you know?
Yeah, I love Joaquin. I mean, I get excited every time he has something coming out, whenever he's attached to a project. I really think that he disappears into every role that he tackles, and some for better or worse, but I love the guy. He is so prolific, and I love that he has done practically everything. I love that he's not an actor that sticks to just one specific genre, because there are actors that do stick to just one specific kind of role. the fact that Joaquin could be someone that is in these heavy hidden dramas, and then he's in these thrillers, and then he's in more of these subtle character studies, but then he's also done comedy. I mean, the guy's done practically everything. He's almost 50 years old, mm-hmm. and he's done so much. And it's really incredible. I mean, he's been acting since he was a kid. His brother, River, rest in peace, was obviously another gifted actor who was taken from us way, way too soon. Mm-hmm. And Joaquin, I mean, I cannot imagine what it was like for him to follow in his footsteps. Like, my older brother was like this big actor, and now he's not here, and it's like now I gotta carry the mantle. And I mean, he's done great, and you know, he's been nominated for multiple awards. He won an Oscar for Joker, and I mean, he just continues to pump out great work after work. And like you said, even if the film isn't exactly the best, he always delivers with his performance. He always knocks it out of the park, which I really respect about him. And he never seems to be phoning it in. He never seems to be doing a movie just for a paycheck. You could tell that he's an admirer of the craft that's on display, the script mm-hmm. that's handed to him, and what he has to do to sink his teeth into playing the characters that he's portraying. And that's why I love him so much, and I'm really excited to get into our top five favorite films with Joaquin Phoenix. So I just say, without further ado, let's get right into it. So Gerald, what is your number five favorite Joaquin Phoenix film of all time?
Yeah, man, we already hinted at it a little bit, but it's M. Night Shyamalan's Signs from 2002. I know I kind of gave it away at the top, but I didn't ask you ahead of time because I was thinking, like, is it Joaquin performances or is it Joaquin movies? So I decided to just kind of do the movie as a whole that he's featured in or he's top billed in. He's obviously not the lead here. Mel Gibson is, who I think also turns into a great performance, one of the best of his career. It's a very, this movie's strange because, like, I can remember when I saw it, and this is in the early 2000s, so I wasn't a young guy by any means, giving away my age, but I was probably 27 or 28 when I saw this, so I wasn't like a kid, but it's strange because it scared me. Like, I can remember after this movie, I saw it at the theater with the woman I was with at the time, and we came home, and I can remember having trouble sleeping that night after seeing the movie in the theater. And that, I'm a horror junkie, as you know, so that mm-hmm. doesn't really happen to me, but it just kind of shook me a little bit. And I think what Shyamalan did here, which he's had that magic before with movies like The Sixth Sense and some others, but I think he did it with Signs too, where he was able to make it a real life, like, it's a sci-fi story, but it feels like this could be happening in middle America. Like, it felt very real. It didn't feel far-fetched. And whether you believe in aliens or not, and honestly, I don't even know if I do. I think I do. Like, people have asked me that before, and I think I believe in aliens. I never really sat down and, like, thought about it, you know? But I think the fact that I have that kind of unknown in my mind, too, this movie really spoke to me as well. But anyway, it really scared me. It shook me. But also, it was interesting because it was such a tender, like, familial story about the family, and Joaquin's Meryl plays a very integral role in the film, and obviously the climax of the movie is kind of centered around, you know, her premonitions and, you know, the mother who's gone, and what she says and what he remembers her saying. And Meryl's very big in the plot in the end of this movie, and his character is so kind of quiet and shy and not really the Joaquin that we see in a lot of the roles, where it's boisterous and Oscar worthy. And I love that too. I love that it's a toned down Joaquin who's letting Mel Gibson kind of do his thing in the lead role, but they play off each other so well. And, you know, Joaquin would go on to work with Shyamalan again, which I think was also a great role for him. But yeah, I love this one, man. Joaquin Phoenix's performance is a little, I don't want to say under the radar, but it's like not the number one thing people might think about when they think about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I just love this movie so much. It's second for me in Shyamalan's catalog, only next to The Sixth Sense. But the rewatchability on this one is higher for me than The Sixth Sense. So I showed this to my 9-year-old recently, and I'm starting to introduce him to kind of, like, I don't want to say low grade horror, mm-hmm. but, like, you know, suspense thrillers, kind of like stuff to ease him into that genre because he wants to watch, you know, everything that I'm watching, which of course he can, he's nine. But he really enjoyed it too. You know, it freaked him out a little bit, but I think it might be dated somewhat because it's 21 years old now, and he wasn't quite as scared at nine as I was at 27. So I don't know. But I love Signs. That's my number five, man. Sorry to be long-winded there.
Oh, no, don't apologize at all. I do really enjoy Signs. It's not on my list, but it's one that I do really, really admire. I love Joaquin in it, and I think him and Mel Gibson have a great back and forth with each other. And I think the core four performances are fantastic. Like, everyone's great. I mean, you also shout out Rory Culkin and a very young Abigail Breslin. Kind of a Succession tie-in because his brother's on Succession. So it's another Succession mentioned today on this episode. It may not be the last. We don't know yet. We'll have to see. But yeah, Signs is very, very good. It's not my favorite Shyamalan film. I would say, yeah, definitely Sixth Sense is my favorite. And then probably Unbreakable. So this would probably be number three for me. I mean, that was at the point where Shyamalan was like pumping out banger after banger after banger. Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, and Signs. I mean, that's a trifecta right there. Like, that's a great streak right there of movies.
I agree.
Will he ever go back to that level? I don't know. I mean, I know some people love his recent works. I'm not super high on his recent works. I didn't like Old. Knock at the Cabin was a bit of a letdown for me.
I didn't like Old either, but I did really like Knock at the Cabin. But what's funny about that, and I know that's not a Joaquin movie, so I'll just make it brief, but what's funny about that is that's not really a Shyamalan-type movie. Like, it was a little different for him. Like, there weren't really any plot twists, and it was pretty straightforward, like a home invasion film. But I liked it. I don't think you see it and you go, oh, that's a Shyamalan movie.
No, not at all.
But for the project itself, I enjoyed it.
Right, definitely. I appreciate him doing something very much out of his comfort zone while still sprinkling a little bit of Shyamalan-isms throughout the movie and everything. But yeah, Signs is a great pick. And my number five is very different from Signs. I'm not a big biopic fan. I do say that, and yet I do enjoy a handful of them. But one of the best ones that I personally have seen is Walk the Line from 2005, where Joaquin stars as the legendary Johnny Cash. Johnny Cash is a guy whose music I got into a little bit later than I had anticipated. And when I found out there was a movie made about him, I was like, oh, I gotta watch this. Oh, Joaquin is playing him? Sure, I'm there right away. Oh, Reese Witherspoon plays June Carter? Perfect. That's, yes, right there. This is a great biopic, and this is how you do a biopic. Does it follow some of the tropes? Yes, it does. It absolutely does. But you're so engrossed by it because of the incredible performances from both Joaquin and Reese Witherspoon, who I should definitely give a shout-out to because, for one, she walked away with the Oscar for this movie.
Thank God.
She is insanely good here. I mean,
unbelievably good. She's I don't know if you even know this, but she's probably my favorite actress.
Oh, she's incredible. I mean,
female actress.
I mean, her performance is no Tracy Flick for me, but it's still like really, really strong. They work off each other. I mean, their chemistry is literal magic. It's magical. And if their chemistry did not work, the whole movie wouldn't work. And I love the sequences where they sing. You could tell that Joaquin tried to replicate Johnny Cash, and he honestly did a great job. Mm-hmm. He did a really good job. And this is a performance to where I think, if they had given it to an actor portraying a musician, this would have been a very deserving win, especially with what we had gotten a couple of years back of a certain actor winning for a certain film that I will not mention.
God, that hurts still.
It stains. It stains. It's ridiculous.
And I mean, I feel bad because I do like Malik.
I like him too, but
they put him in a bad situation. It's just unfavorable.
They really did. And yeah, Walk the Line, I don't have too much to say about it. I really do genuinely love it. I think it's one of the best music biopics out there, and I think it's one of the best biopics to have come out, studio biopics at least, in the past 20 years. It's hard to believe that this movie is almost two decades old, because it doesn't feel that old. It doesn't even feel like it came out that long ago. But I mean, the power of great filmmaking, and James Mangold, I mean, one of the absolute underdogs in the business right now. Every time he has his name attached to a project, he pumps out pretty great work. I love Logan. I love Ford v Ferrari. And I'm so excited to see what he does to cap off Harrison Ford's 10 years in Indiana Jones. I'm so ready to see that. I cannot wait. Walk the Line is my number five. I love it so, so much. Great film. High recommendation. And I'm happy that him and Reese got to work together again in Inherent Vice. And I hope that they get to work together for a third time. Fingers crossed for that. So Walk the Line is my number five. Are you going to pass or is this not on your list?
I'm going to pass, but I'll just say don't forget about Timothy as Bob Dylan as well. That's James Mangold too, right?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's going to be so good, man. Oh, if it's anything even remotely like this and, you know, 20 years added on to what Mangold has learned behind the lens.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, I already want to get Timothy the Oscar, and they haven't even started pre-production.
Listen, it's going to be his time to shine. Like,
please.
Yeah. He is coming for that Oscar. And, you know, people are like, I'm tired of the biopic performances winning the Oscar, but everyone's going to be okay because it's Timothy and he's going to kick ass in that role.
Well, and some of these stories have to be told. I mean, I'm still waiting on a Kurt Cobain biopic. You know, everybody might roll their eyes when it happens, but like some of these stories need to be told. Like they're history at this point. You know?
Who would they get to play him, though? That's like a really tough casting to nail.
Well, you know, they had initially had it in the works and Stephen Dorff was going to play him, but that was also like 20 years ago. So,
yeah. Now I mean, 20 years ago, yeah, that would have been perfect, but.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
But I'm going to pass because I'm going to talk a little bit about it later. So
I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. So now going into our number four is, what is your pick?
Well, my number four, I think I'm getting to kind of know your sensibilities a little bit. So I'm betting that you also have this movie. But my number four is Her from Spike Jonze, the 2013 film with Miss Scarlett Johansson and one of my favorite voice acting performances, which is an episode I just did on my show. But you also have Rooney Mara in there, Chris Pratt in a really weird supporting role. It's so kind of like like just a strange thing in the background that's just like every time you see him, you go, oh, my God, he's in this. Like, I don't know. It's just weird how he kind of exists in this movie. But, yeah, you know, Joaquin is on display here. I mean, this is a role that – and actually Spike may have said this at one point. I don't know if he did or not. But this is one of those roles where you feel like it was made for Joaquin Phoenix. Like, I just literally – you could list any actor right now and I'll just be like, no, they wouldn't be able to do this. Like he was perfect for this role. It's such a quirky kind of lonely story and you connect to his character and you feel lonely. Even if you're not in your normal life, you kind of, you know, Theodore is just this gloomy guy, you know, and he is reliant on technology, which a lot of us are. And especially now, I mean, this came out in 2013, so it was a bit prophetic in some of the things that we're able to do now, and you hear all this stuff with ChatGPT and everything else that's going on. So it's kind of a sci-fi love story, but it's a very, I don't know, it's a very strange movie, but I didn't see it initially. I actually saw this movie for the first time probably, I don't know, I don't have my letterbox in front of me, but probably like 2 or 3 years ago for the first time. So I saw it late. And I was disappointed in myself because I loved it. It was just so unique. And like I said, if we're talking about Joaquin performances, I know he didn't win for this. But, I mean, for me, this is – I guess I'll put it this way. For me, I feel like of his catalog, at least of the ones I'm going to talk about tonight, this is Joaquin playing the most Joaquin role. Like,
yes.
I just can't think of a role that's more becoming to him and, you know, what I think he would be like in real life, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a massive pass. this is a big pass. I cannot wait to talk about this one.
Yeah.
It's so cliche. It's very much a Brian Suffield movie, so I can't wait to talk about it. So my number four is a film that I think he should have won his very first Oscar for, and that is The Master from 2012, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. I talked about this very briefly on my PTI episode with the incredible Sophia Simonella, which you guys need to go listen to because that was quite a discussion. That was one of my favorites that I've done in recent memory. But, man, Joaquin, the places that he goes to in this movie are really terrifying. And I cannot tell you that the first time I saw this movie, there were so many moments that lingered in my brain that I couldn't stop thinking about for days. I did not appreciate this movie the first time I saw it, but to be fair, when you're a 16-year-old watching this movie and you're like, I don't think I understood it, that's naturally you're not going to vibe with it. But at the height of COVID, I gave it a rewatch and I was like, oh my God, this might be one of the best films I've ever seen. And Joaquin's work as Freddy, this might be the best acting I think he's ever done. And again, my opinion could change throughout the episode, but I really think this is like top two Joaquin Phoenix performances. You could say what you want about the movie itself, but the acting that that's on display here is really incredible. And the places that this character goes really just truly break my heart, but they also terrify me. The processing scene where it's just him and Philip Seymour Hoffman's character talking, I mean, I don't even know how to describe my mindset during that sequence. And I feel that Paul Thomas Anderson always brings the best out of every single actor that he collaborates with, even if they have the smallest roles on screen. It's so funny that we just talked about Rami Malek because he's also in this movie.
Yeah, he is. I was going to mention that too.
And he's great in it. He's great. But it's the Joaquin Phoenix show. It's the Philip Seymour Hoffman show. They both delivered the best work that they had ever had. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman also should have walked away with the Oscar for this, and I'm really happy that Amy Adams got recognized for a nomination as well. I mean, talk about an actor who doesn't even have an Oscar, which is sickening and it's disgusting. But
yeah,
everyone here does a great job. But then you have the imagery, the score, the costumes, the production design, the writing, everything here is impeccable. PTA is literally, pun intended, he is a master at what he does, and he continues to knock it out of the park. And I love that he got to collaborate with Joaquin twice. The other collaboration is not on my list, but I had to put this on my list because this quite simply has some of the best acting that I may have ever seen on the big screen. This film left me feeling so confounded and just shaken up. But my God, it's a truly beautiful film. And one of my favorite shots of all time is the shot of him running in the desert. And it's like, God, the imagery is just so... And then the Johnny Greenwood score behind it is just elevating everything. It's literal perfection. I love it so much. The Master is my number four. Are you going to pass or is this not on your list?
It's not on my list. It would have been my number six, though. It was really close. It was between this and Signs for me. You know, this movie's... a weird one in my head because I'm not rushing to rewatch it, but similar to what you said, when I saw it, I was just taken back with all the performances. I mean, this is a performance heavy film, and I think it starts with Joaquin. I mean, he's the lead, he's the best in this movie, but Philip Seymour Hoffman's right there too, and it's almost like they're having somewhat of an acting competition in this movie. I mean, it's a freaking clinic in this film. Amy Adams, Laura Dern, Jesse Plemons, you mentioned Rami Malek. I mean, all of them are just like A++++ as far as their resume goes when it comes to acting. And I can remember taking that away from it. And I mean, PTA is one of the best alive, dude. I mean, he, you know, even if you put one of his movies on mute, it's just so beautiful to look at, you know, and he just really knows how to get the best out of his cinematographers and editors and, you know, director of photography and, the lighting, I mean, everything is just
Johnny Greenwood,
yeah,
man.
That's right. Everything's always just like what they should show in film school to anybody that wants to do this type of thing for a living. I mean, there's a few filmmakers that are in that kind of bucket where it's like, and I'm not saying The Master is a bad movie by any means because it's obviously my number six. I think it's great. But it's almost like it's not even a... doesn't even really matter what the movie's about. It's like if you just watch the craftsmanship around it, it's like awe-inspiring if you're interested in film in any way, because he is, and you already used the pun that he's a master, but he is, you know. And this is a movie that I love. It's probably like third or fourth in my PTA rankings because I think the rewatchability is low for me personally. I've only seen it a couple times, but I loved it. Boogie Nights is my favorite PTA. And just to kind of give you a contrast, like I could watch that movie once a week for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So the rewatchability is super high on that one. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I gauge my rankings of a filmmaker or whatever. So, but it's a masterful film, and Joaquin is beyond memorable. And if he had walked away with the Academy Award for this, nobody would have been shocked. I mean, it was just a great performance.
Do you think he should have won the Oscar that year, or do you think it was okay that Daniel Day-Lewis won for Lincoln?
I think Joaquin should have won that. I think that Daniel Day-Lewis was like, you know, the Spielberg, the fanfare.
Historical figure.
Yeah, another biopic, right? But I mean, mm-hmm. so is this. But I mean, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis is I mean, him and Joaquin are somewhat similar if you really think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of like their choices that they make and mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know, man. I just feel like it was because it was such a well-known American story.
Yeah.
And it was Spielberg.
And it was a great Daniel performance, Day-Lewis. Too. It was obviously an incredible performance, but
yeah, it was.
Man. Oh, gosh.
I guess what I'm saying is if I had a vote, I would have most likely voted for Joaquin that year.
Same. 100% yeah. Same. And now going into our number threes, what is your pick?
All right, man. So my number three, now you know I'm a horror guy. This mm-hmm. isn't a horror movie, but if it was filmed differently, which actually is ironic because I'm a horror guy, but I like that it kind of cut some corners to not be horror, which is weird, but... I thought it was very innovative because if it was filmed kind of straightforward, this would be almost a horror movie or at least borderline. But it's a movie by Lynn Ramsey called You Were Never Really Here, where Joaquin plays this kind of broken down war veteran, and he has taken on this life as kind of a hitman. And, you know, there's a scene where he goes into a hardware store, grabs a hammer. And, you know, we know what he's going to do with it. You know, he's going to kill this guy with it. And the way Ramsey shoots this film. Have you seen this, by the way?
I have seen it.
So the way Ramsey shoots this film, and this happens multiple times in this movie, he's, like, in a rage carrying the hammer to kill this guy, gets to the scene of the crime. Like, he'll lift the hammer back as if he's about to blow the guy in the head with it, and then the editing, it'll cut away. And we'll just see a body on the floor. With like in a pool of blood. I mean, that's just one example, but she does that a lot where there's like these quick cuts that like from a film perspective, I love it because it really makes, it's jarring to the audience. And you go, wait a minute, is there something wrong with the reel? Like what happened here? And then as it happens more and more throughout the movie, which I feel like it's a phenomenal job. I mean, I'm a film editor, my daughter's an editor. So, like, when they do, like, really cool things like this, I love it, man. Like, I love those weirdly edited things where they throw you off track. You know, the story stays the same, right? Like, this is a chronological story. This isn't like a Christopher Nolan thing. I mean, this is still a point A to point Z movie. But the way it's shot, you feel like you're missing something. But you're still having the whole story told to you. And I love that about this movie. This is one of the very few films in my life, and I've already told you I'm an old dude. This is one of the very few films in my life that I watched back to back twice. I rewatched it immediately. Mm. I didn't see this movie initially in the theater. I saw it on Amazon Prime, I think, a couple years after it came out. It was during COVID, I want to say, and I watched it right away. I was like, oh my god, I fucking love that. I'm sorry, I don't know if I'm supposed to cuss. But I can cuss up
as much as you want here, baby.
But I loved it. I had to rewatch it, so I put it back on. I watched it again. I've only done that like two or three times in my life where I've watched a movie back to back like that. And ironically, the last time you came on was another one, which was Stand By Me, but with River Phoenix. But yeah, so I love this movie. I love how it teeters the line between like, you know, this assassin kind of story. It's a little bit of horror. It's a little bit of thriller. It's touching with the relationship with his mother in the movie and to the young girl in the film. And Joaquin is a very quiet, almost silent performance in this movie. Very little dialogue in the script for his character, but he just carries so much torment from his, you know, wartime stuff. And you just feel for this dude. You know, he's definitely an antagonist, but like a sympathetic one, you know? in this movie, and I love this film. It's one of those films that literally blindsided me. So I'm curious to see what you have to say about it since you saw it.
Yeah, so I've only seen it once. I watched it not too long after it dropped on Prime back in 2018. And I think this is an example of a fantastic film that I could only see myself watching just once in my life.
Wow.
Joaquin is absolutely phenomenal here. He delivers some of the best acting of his entire career in this film. Lynn Ramsey did a great job directing this and bringing this story to life. But it left me feeling so shitty about myself. And oh my God, it left me feeling so down. But that was obviously the intent. And
because of like the loneliness of his character and stuff?
Oh, 100%. 100%. And it was just such a poignant performance, but it was also so restrained. And then he would just have these moments where he would just explode. And it was terrifying to watch. It was absolutely terrifying. And I think someone like Joaquin was able to balance all that so beautifully. And it's very hard to do that. It's very hard to bring a massive showcase of different emotions through a performance. But Joaquin, there's a reason why Joaquin is able to do it throughout so many of his performances. And yeah, that's a great, great pick. Definitely top 10 Joaquin for me. In terms of performances, straight up performances, easily top 5 for me. Easily top 5.
And I'll just say before you give your pick about this performance real quick is like, and I believed it, but what I feel like he did too is his character just doesn't care. Like he goes into any situation almost like, I'm going to avenge these girls that are being abducted, which is, you know, the center of the story here. But if I die, who cares? Like, you know, I'm going in reckless abandon. If it's my time, it's my time. And you get the sense that he hopes it's his time. You know, he hopes somebody kind of takes him out of his misery, so to speak. And I feel like that kind of added layer to the character, and that Joaquin, I feel like Joaquin kind of went there emotionally, you know, where he kind of believed that too when he was filming these scenes opposite whoever his scene partner was. So I really, you know, we've talked about it all night, but I really just appreciated his dedication to this character.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you couldn't have said it any better than me. It's a great pick. And you know, my number three, this is one of the most overlooked films in Joaquin's filmography, and it's so disappointing that this does not get the recognition it deserves. I think Joaquin displays some of the best acting ever from his career in this film, and that is True Lovers, directed by James Gray. James Gray is a filmmaker that he has collaborated with 4 times. During the height of COVID, I went through James Gray's entire filmography. I had only seen The Lost City of Z and Ad Astra right before we all went to lockdown. But I decided to go through his entire catalog and watch this and The Immigrant and We Own the Night and The Yards, and all of which star Joaquin. And I was just so blown away by his approach to telling his stories and bringing his characters to life. And the story of True Lovers is really, really interesting. Joaquin Phoenix plays this incredibly depressed man who just went through a severe heartbreak, and he decides to move back in with his parents. But then he catches himself in a love triangle between two of the most stunning people that has ever graced our lifetime. His neighbor, Gwyneth Paltrow, who's going through a lot of stuff herself. And then this young woman, who I believe is the daughter of one of his parents' friends, played by Vanessa Shaw. And let me just say, if I'm caught in a dilemma where I have to choose between these two women, I would shoot myself in the head because I have no idea what I would do. I can't choose between the two of them because literally these are two of the most stunning people ever. And I loved following this character so much. Leonard is very quiet. He's very shy, but you could tell he has a lot of passions and he has a lot of admirations. But he also just wants to be with someone. He went through this massive heartbreak, and he tried to kill himself. That's literally how the movie opened up. and he's trying to better himself, not just for his family, but more so for himself. And it's a really quiet, tender film, and it's my personal favorite film that James Gray has directed. James Gray is a filmmaker who has yet to make a bad film in my eyes. I like all of his stuff. I personally really liked Armageddon Time. I know it was very divisive in our community, but I really was a fan of
it.
Yeah,
I didn't mind it either.
I was very, very blown away by it. Oh, great. Another Succession tie-in because Jeremy Strong is in that movie. So that's three that's Succession right. mentions tonight.
You knew it was coming.
I knew it was coming back. I didn't even think that we were going to do it again, but here we are. But no, True Lovers is a really underrated film in Joaquin's filmography, and it's one that really deserves way more recognition than it gets. And something that is actually very crucial to bring up regarding this film, it's not so much the film itself, but the press of this movie. So when Joaquin was doing press for this movie, it was during that time where Joaquin was like, oh, I'm not going to be an actor anymore. I'm going to be a rapper. And that's when he did his own stint pretending like, oh, I'm going to be a musician. And he was filming, what's that movie called? I forgot the name of the movie.
I'm still here.
Yeah, I'm still here, you know, where he worked with Casey Affleck. And then he went on Letterman to be like, oh, I'm not acting anymore. Right. Wear the glasses and everything. Like, it was one of the best publicity stunts of all time. Right. It's incredible. No one would be able to pull it off as well as Joaquin did back in the day. But yeah, True Lovers is really masterful, and it's so underrated, and it's really disappointing that nobody talks about it because some of Joaquin's best acting is on display here. Gwyneth Paltrow delivers what might be my favorite performance from her. And Vanessa Shaw, who I haven't seen a lot with, I think, honestly, the only movies I've seen with her are this and Hocus Pocus. So, you know, it just comes to show that her filmography may not be as large as I think it is. But, yeah, I love it so much. And also, Isabella Rossellini as Leonard's mom is impeccable. Impeccable. Like, truly incredible. She's played two of the best mother figures in cinema history. The mom and True Lovers. And then the grandmother in Marcel the Shell. So
there you
I love the range. I love the range from Miss Rossellini. It's great stuff. True Lovers is my number three. I'm going to assume this is not on your list, but I'll just ask anyway. Are you going to pass or is this not on your list?
Well, I'm going to pass, but not because it's on my list, because this is a blind spot for me. So when I was looking at Joaquin's catalog, there's like three movies of his that I should have seen and I haven't, which is actually a pretty good record in terms of what I've seen. But I didn't know you were going to name one of them. But I've actually never seen this one. But I also am kind of prone to James Gray's catalog. Like, the stuff that I have seen, I like. And I like his kind of subtle approach to filmmaking. And, of course, we know Joaquin is a freaking powerhouse. So the other stuff that he's done, I've enjoyed. I just never saw this one. And I guess I'll hold off on mentioning the other ones in case they come up on your list. But, yeah, it's a blind spot for me, man. But I was like sitting back in my chair. I don't know if everybody's going to be able to see this or hear it or whatever, but I was just kind of listening to you talk about it, because when people recommend movies to me, it's different if they're like, oh, you got to see this, man. Like, Joaquin, you know, whatever. But like, when there's passion behind it and like I hear like why you love it, and I don't feel like that's like a spoiler heavy movie either, you know?
No.
So I'm just kind of listening to you, and I'm going, yeah, I need to check this out, and I think I'm going to. So I don't know if you know it's streaming anywhere or not, but it's one that I definitely have to add to my watch.
Unfortunately, it's I think it's streaming somewhere. It's on Prime. I watched it on Prime.
Okay. Yeah, I need to check it out for sure, dude.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's my favorite thing that James Gray has directed. And when I was rewatching it the other day, I was like, oh man, Gwyneth Paltrow, you threw away the best husband in the world because you were married to Chris Martin, the lead singer of Coldplay. You really screwed that up, honey.
the choices we make.
Yeah. I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. And now, our top two. Yeah, I am so curious to hear what is in your top two. I mean, I don't even know where you're going to go with this. You passed on one film. I passed on one film. I'd be curious to hear what the other film is on your list. So what is your second favorite Joaquin film of all time?
You know what? I'm interested to find out too, because I don't know. It's a tie between these two movies. So we were joking, I think it was before we started recording, but like he has so much stuff coming out in the next year or two that like if we recorded this episode next year, it could be a completely different top five. I mean, the guy has so much stuff coming out. But I think with that point being made, I think these two movies, my top two, are not going anywhere. They will, at a minimum, always be in my top five Joaquin movies. So I'll go ahead and talk about one that you've already talked about for my number two, which is James Mangold's Walk the Line from 2005. And it kind of ties back. I mean, you said it beautifully before. There's not a lot more I can say, but just to put a personal kind of spin on it, it ties back to kind of what we talked about in the beginning, Brian, when you were asking me about my journey and my connection to my father. Now, my father wasn't around when this movie was released in 05, but he like literally solicited Johnny Cash's catalog on me my entire childhood. I was talking about music with you earlier and some of the artists that he loved and the vinyl records that we had, and Johnny Cash was one of those. And he loved country music. He loved like that Southern rock kind of flair. So he was always playing Cash, and I don't like country music, but I love Johnny Cash. And there's a few artists that are considered country that I really enjoy because my father was like not just a fan of them, but like he loved them. You know what I mean? Like it's just, it's something different when you just like love something, you know, and you just take pride in the fact that you're a fan of it. And he did that with Johnny Cash. So, you know, kind of seeing this Cash's life story played out on screen, I knew the music because, like I mentioned, from my dad, but I didn't know the story. And it was just a very interesting lesson, which, you know, biopics fall into the trap sometimes. And we were just talking about Bohemian Rhapsody and some other ones that have been misses, you know, whatever people may think of them. But if they tell the story to where it educates the viewer, which is what Walk the Line did for me. You know, I knew the music, but I had no idea about this guy's struggles and the situation with June Carter, leaving her, you know, first husband to be with Johnny and the relationship they had, and, you know, the fact that she wrote Ring of Fire. I didn't even know that until I saw the movie, mm-hmm. which, you know, is weird that I didn't know that, but I just didn't. But, you know, kind of the little sprinkles throughout with, like, Elvis Presley's in there a little bit, Jerry Lee Lewis is in there a little bit. So all these other artists that I also knew from, you know, being exposed to it from my folks and my grandparents and stuff when I was younger was really cool. Yes, Joaquin is what we're talking about tonight, but I love this movie so effing much because of Reese Witherspoon. You mentioned Tracy Flick before. I'm not going to disagree with you, but because I honestly, she should have got nominated for that. I mean, I think she was just too young and was an unknown at the time. But
that's a different discussion for another time. I could go on about that for hours.
But bro, I mean, Big Little Lies. I mean, anything. I just love her.
She's incredible. She's incredible.
Working today, she's my favorite female actor. Absolutely love her, and I do feel like this was her best performance as June Carter Cash. I just the Southern charm. The inherent, just like she's just magnetic, you know, the charisma, the fact that they sang their own songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Reese Witherspoon, and I know we're talking about Joaquin, I'm so sorry. I'll have to come back when you do a Reese episode. but she just like, she made you see why Johnny fell for her. You know, like, and I'm not saying we wouldn't fall for Reese Witherspoon just being herself, because we probably would, but her portrayal of June Carter was so magnetic, and you fell for her too, and you rooted for their love story. And you know, the fact that in real life Johnny Cash died like this 6 months after she did, because people say he just couldn't live without her and he had a broken heart. It's just crazy, man. And we've already talked about James Mangold and his ability to really capture a story, but especially like a story kind of centered around music, around a real person. And I'm sorry to go on about it because I know you already talked about it, but I can't believe this isn't my number one, dude.
it's
my runner up, man.
I'm just so curious to see what your number one is when you get to it. I'm really, really genuinely curious.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. I wasn't able to rewatch this movie before this podcast, and I definitely need to rewatch it soon. It's been so long. I might go on a mini James Mangold binge before Indy comes out, and I just He's so good. He's one of the most underrated filmmakers working today. It's
Yeah,
incredible what he's able to
I
bring
agree.
from all of his movies. I love him so much. And my number two is Come On, Come On.
Okay.
I remember walking into this movie so excited to see it because I'm a huge fan of Mike Mills. I love Beginners, and 20th Century Women is one of the best films of the past 10 years, in my opinion. I mean, I will literally defend that film and scream on the top of the hill about why that film is so masterful. And hopefully soon I will do an episode where I could talk about that movie. So, Annette Bening, if you have a movie coming out soon, just please have a movie come out soon so I can just talk about that movie until the end of time.
Greta Gerwig, but dude, Barbie's coming out.
Greta
Yeah.
Gerwig. Oh
That's
man.
your in right there.
Billy Crudup. Billy, do you have a movie coming out? I could go on and on, but come on, come on. Let's talk about Come On, Come On. So, when it was announced that Joaquin Phoenix was going to be collaborating with Mike Mills, I was like, that's a match made in heaven. That's a great pairing. And hearing the fact that it's a movie that is, about a radio journalist who is working on a project where he travels around the country interviewing children and teenagers about the future and what could happen in life. And then he has this situation where he goes to visit his sister who lives in LA and takes care of his nephew, who is played incredibly well by Woody Norman, who, let me just say that
Really good, man.
this is one of the best child performances I have honestly ever seen. The fact that this kid was acted on the same level as someone like Joaquin Phoenix is really, really impressive. And to not to mention either that the kid's British. I mean, the American accent that he pulled off was impeccable. I was shocked. I was genuinely shocked when I found out that he was not American. I was like, what the fuck?
I know.
I'm like, the kid's like 10 years old acting alongside Joaquin Phoenix. What the hell am I doing with my life? Like, Jesus Christ. It's amazing what he was able to pull off. And their chemistry with each other was beautiful. I mean, the character of Johnny is just so pure and wholesome and tender, like I said at the top. And this was such a great film for Joaquin to be in right after Joker, because obviously Joker was an emotionally cathartic film. It was an
Yeah.
intense performance. I mean, he went places that we knew that he could go to, but it was very, very gruesome, regardless if you liked the movie or not. So to see him be in this kind of movie where it's very subtle and chill and laid back and really beautiful, honestly, I mean, this film goes places that I certainly was not expecting. I knew that I was going to feel emotional because that's what Mike Mills succeeds at doing.
Yeah.
But man, I saw this at the New York Film Festival with a sold-out crowd, and I cannot tell you how many tears were wiped, not just by the audience surrounding me, but myself included. I'm not a guy that cries a lot during movies. I will vocalize that, but this got me in ways that I was not expecting. And I think the beautiful thing with Come On, Come On is that you see a child grieving, like, so earnestly, and it felt real. It felt real. I didn't feel like I was watching actors act. I felt like I was watching the character of Jesse grieving with everything that is going on in his life. And not to spoil anything for anyone who hasn't seen the movie, but it's heartbreaking to watch. And then he see gets this somewhat father figure in his uncle, Johnny. And it's a really beautiful relationship. And I mean, I just think that the low key yet honest approach, it affected me in ways that I wasn't anticipated. And it tackles the theme of family and how, even when flawed, there will always be love surrounding you. And there are so many moments where Jesse is like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And Johnny's like, it's okay to feel sad. It's okay to feel angry. Like, everyone feels that way. You're a kid. It's okay. And my God, the waterworks were flooding. And rewatching the movie last night, I mean, oh, it hit even harder this time than I could have imagined. And yeah, Joaquin Phoenix should have been nominated for Best Actor for this. Woody Norman should have been nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and Mike Mills should have been nominated for his screenplay. And them not getting nominated is literally one of my many villain origin stories. And all jokes aside, I mean, the work here was really impeccable. This was one of the best films of 2021. I'm so glad that I got to see this in the theater. I'm so glad that I got to witness a Q&A that happened right afterwards with Joaquin and Mike Mills.
Oh, awesome.
I mean, it's a really incredible film. I had it right outside my top five that year. And A24 in 2021 pumped out really great work, like film after film. I mean, I can't even tell you all the stuff that they pumped out in 2021. I mean, Tragedy Macbeth comes to mind. That was amazing. That was fantastic. I mean, my God, what else did they pump out? They pumped out so many juggernauts of films. Let's see what else they pumped out. I mean, you think about The Green Knight. You think about Minari, which had some wide release in 2021. The Val Kilmer documentary was fantastic. Souvenir Part 2 was really great. I know a lot of people were very polarizing with Red Rocket. I was a fan of Red Rocket. But, like, the amount of content that A24 pumped out in 2021 is really incredible, and it's really sad that this got shafted award season, considering that Mike Mills' previous two films got nominated for their screenplays, and the fact that this couldn't even get nominated is really, really disgusting. I've had a long discussions about how that Best Original Screenplay category at the Oscars was really not my favorite. There was only two screenplays in that category that I loved, and neither of them won, unfortunately. But yeah, yeah, Come On, Come On is really masterful stuff, and it was one of the many films in 2021 that was also shot in black and white, that was also presented in black and white. I mean, Tragedy Macbeth was presented in black and white. Belfast was presented in black and white. So many black and white films. Yeah, I love Come On, Come On. If you haven't seen it, please do yourself a favor, check it out. It's one of Joaquin's most endearing, vulnerable performances. And it, I mean, it's incredible stuff. And I really do think, once again, reiterating this, that this was a great film for him to do right after Joker. I love Come On, Come On. It is my number two. So what are your thoughts on Come On, Come On?
Yeah, I love this movie too. I've only seen it once when it came out. I absolutely love it. I think it should have gotten a lot more traction that year also. My daughter is a film student, so she's a little bit of a kind of an indie film gal, and this was her favorite movie of that year. And when I was doing, because I think you know this, but I do my own award show, and she was lobbying to get it a nomination for her, at her dad's awards that year. But she loves this movie. One thing that I love about this film that has happened before, and there's some coming out in this year that I'm excited about that do this, but it's really cool when a movie, and you came on the P's like a month ago, and we talked about coming of age movies. It's really cool when a film is a coming of age movie and a life reflection movie. And that's what Come On, Come On is to me, because Jesse's character is kind of playing that coming of age role, and then Johnny is reflecting on his life as he's getting a little bit older, and how they're able to kind of meet halfway and their stories kind of merge together. And, you know, everything you said as well, I echo. I mean, it's beautifully shot. Mike Mills knows how to pull at the heartstrings. Without a doubt. And I need to revisit this film because, like I said, I only saw it the one time the week it came out. But I am excited to revisit it. And hearing you talk about it, you're going to be running through my mind the whole time. I can see why Brian loves this, you know? So I need to revisit this one, but I do love it, man.
It's just so good. And I love a good film that's set in both LA and New York City. Oh my God. Oh, God, I'm so happy I saw this in New York as well. I was just like, oh my God, I'm literally here right now watching this movie. And oh God, and yeah, I almost watched it a few weeks ago when I was in LA. I actually almost watched this when I was in LA, and I'm like, I don't think I could put myself through it right now. But since I knew I was doing this podcast, I'm like, okay, now I have to watch it. And yeah, God, I mean, what a picture, truly what a picture. But it obviously is not as good as our number ones to us. So obviously, you know what my number one is. But before we get into why my number one is my number one, what is your favorite Joaquin Phoenix film of all time?
This is crazy, man. It's basically tied with Walk the Line. It's 1A, 1B, but it's Ridley Scott's Gladiator.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that is my number one. This is a film. I mean, I've been talking about rewatchability all night, which is kind of how I molded my list to begin with. I could watch this movie, and in fact, this movie sometimes will be on like regular TV, like TBS or TNT or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go to the next channel if it's on. Like, I have to watch whatever until commercial break at least. I love this movie. Joaquin, we're talking about his roles and stuff. He chews this movie. Like, he eats, bro. Like, any scene that he's in, he absolutely demands our attention. He's like, frightening and disgusting and just a really unsavory character that is just immediately hated, even when even in the beginning of the movie, when he's like kind of the shy, not shy, but like the underdog, like kind of loser son in the beginning, you still kind of hate him, you know? And then, of course, when he becomes Emperor Commodus, just you loathe this guy, and you literally cannot wait for Maximus to get the better of him. This, of course, is a feel-good hero story, so we know it's going to have a happy ending, and you know Commodus is going to get his due, which ends up happening. But I just love Joaquin's approach to this character, where it was almost like, what can I do for them to hate me as much as humanly possible? You know, because the character's written that way, but I don't know that we would have hated Commodus to the extent that we did without Joaquin's kind of approach to the character. I think this is some of Russell Crowe's best work. I'm not a huge fan of him as an actor. I do like him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I dislike him, but I feel like this is some of his best work as Maximus in this movie. I just love Ridley Scott's kind of epic, grandiose, the way he shoots movies anyway with the visual effects, but he also incorporates some practical stuff. And you know, Joaquin's going to be reunited with him for Napoleon this year, which I'm really excited for. It's going to be a wartime kind of probably gladiator-esque type movie. So I'm really looking forward to that one too. But for me, this movie is my number one because I thought it was the best representation of like a movie that I really enjoy. Just, I have fun watching it, but also like, I can really admire Joaquin's dedication to his character in this movie. And this was also in 2000 too. So this was like, I'm not saying this is where he made his name, but this is possibly the first, like at least box office wise, like big role for him. And you kind of stood up and took notice after that. And mm-hmm. I mean, 23 years later, the guy's doing, I mean, he's one of the best alive. So I feel like maybe that kind of started here in terms of like, box office draw, at least, if you will. So yeah, Gladiator is my number one, man. What do you think about it?
Oh, I love Gladiator. It's so good. I'm so bummed that I couldn't put it on the list. I love it so much. I think this might be, it's tough. It might be my favorite Russell Crowe performance. I don't know. I'm also a huge fan of A Beautiful Mind, which he should have won an Oscar for, personally. That's ridiculous that he didn't win for that. But Joaquin is so good in this. He is so great. It's so cool that he got nominated for this as well. I think it's really awesome. It's an awesome nomination. And I cannot wait for him to collaborate with Ridley again. So Napoleon's the first time they're working together since this movie, right?
I believe so, unless I'm mistaken.
That's insane. That's crazy mm-hmm. that they haven't worked together since this movie. Yeah, I mean, what an epic film. A very cool Best Picture winner. Ridley should have won director. It's kind of sad that he didn't win director because he still has no Oscar to his name, which is weird. Absurd. Yeah, you that's would weird. Think that he would have one, but
certain
no.
filmmakers, you just go, what? Like, mm-hmm. How is that not?
Exactly.
Like, I know people get up in arms about, like, you know, giving out Oscars for careers or whatever, mm-hmm. but certain filmmakers, though, and actors really, too, you go, everything they've done, they don't have an Academy Award. Yeah, it's just weird. And he's one of those people.
And you would think, oh, the film won Best Picture. Why not give it to the guy who directed the whole thing?
Right.
Like, why? Like, I understand if he wasn't nominated, but he was nominated. So it makes no sense. who won
the whole scene? The whole scene with Are You Entertained or whatever?
Who won that? Soderbergh won that year for Traffic.
Yep, you're right. Which is also a great movie.
Oh, it's so good. That's my favorite Soderbergh movie. I love it so much. But, Oh, God. Yeah, Gladiator. I mean, I guess me not putting it on my list means that I wasn't entertained enough to put it on the list. But you know, it's okay. It's okay. And
he was talking to you, I guess.
But now it's time for me to talk about why Her is my favorite Joaquin Phoenix performance of all time. So
can I just say before you do your spiel, I knew this was your number one. I knew it.
How could now you we, possibly know that?
I don't know. I just feel like, well, I shouldn't say I knew it. I suspected it. Like, right. I kind of was thinking, like, that's going to be high on Brian's list. I don't know. I feel like I've kind of gotten to know your sensibilities when you came on my show a little bit and some stuff you've done on Twitter. But, yeah, no, I love this movie, so I want to hear why you love it.
Oh, man. I don't even know where to start. I really don't know where to start. Joaquin's performance as Theodore is so beautiful, and you want to give the guy a hug. You just want to hang out with this guy. And yeah, he's introverted. Yeah, he's very shy. He's very socially awkward. But Joaquin brings all that so perfectly and so naturally. And yes, the idea of a love story between a man and a phone, on paper, I'm like, okay, come on. Is this really what we're going for? And I remember when I saw the trailer for this 10 years ago. I can't believe this movie's 10 years old.
I know.
I was like, this looks so dumb. This is the stupidest premise ever. Now, granted, I was 15. I wasn't as knowledgeable with film at that point. I wasn't as on top of it as I am now. But I'm like, my God. Like, no thanks. I will pass on this movie. And then I watched it, like, 2016, 2017 for the first time. And I was like, oh, this is good. This is good stuff. And then at the start of the decade, I decided to rewatch this again. So just a couple of months before the world shut down and the world became what it ended up becoming. And I was like, why did I underestimate this movie for so long? Like, this is the kind of romance that I love to see. Yes, again, a man falling in love with his phone may not sound like the most enticing thing ever, but it's not about that. You know, I think this is a great depiction of showing pretty much where we are now, where we're in love with our phones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this movie came out in 2013 when smartphones were becoming a pretty big thing. And now, obviously, smartphones have taken off and become what they've become. And people are always so glued to their phones. Like, they always have their head down in their phones. But it's like, you gotta pay attention to what's in front of you. You guys be appreciative of what is physically in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have the phone, you could go to it later, you don't need to be on it 24/7. And it's like this when
people
movie
record the concerts and stuff with their
recording
phone
the concerts
instead of watching the band or whatever.
Oh, and I know people like that. One time I was on Instagram and I saw someone tape the whole, like, it was like a whole Post Malone concert. I'm like, can you just watch the concert?
Yeah.
Like, appreciate Post's craft as a musician, please. Like, come on. But that's a different story for another time. But no, it's like there's that one sequence where he's walking. You know, he has his head down and everything. Then you just see practically everyone surrounding him looking at their phones. They're not looking at what's in front of them. And if they're with someone, they're not paying attention to them. They're paying attention to their phones. And the concept here is really, really incredible. And I think the idea of blending sci-fi with romance is so unique. And it made me think of one of my favorite films of all time, Eternal Sunshine, where it also blended sci-fi and romance so beautifully. And fittingly enough, both of these movies walked away with the Oscars for Best Original Screenplay. And I think this is one of the best screenplay wins of the past, like, 10 to 15 years. I think this is such a deserving win. And what a career for Spike Jonze to think that this man was involved with Jackass, and he has a freaking Oscar. I mean, what a flex. Truly, a major flex. I mean, and the fact in 2013 he had this and Bad Grandpa come out in the same year, I was like, oh my God, like, what a range
that's
of
true,
cinema
actually.
Right there.
Yeah, that's like, true, actually, yeah.
I'm blown away, and this is my favorite film from Spike Jonze, although adaptation is, like, right there. That's, like, they're very close. I'm a big fan of adaptation, and I do love Being John Malkovich. I need to give Where the Wild Things Are another rewatch. I haven't seen that since I haven't seen it since I was a kid, and I thought it was so boring when I was a kid, but I think I'm missing something. I think I saw it when I was cranky.
Well, it is tough, too, because they're trying to adapt a book that's like 10 pages, you know?
Well, not only that, but I was just like, I don't think I understood what they were going for when I was like 10 or 11 when that movie came out. But now I'm an adult, and I feel like I'll be able to catch on some things now. Yeah, I need to rewatch that very soon. Spike, when are you going to make your next film? Not a documentary. I'm sure your BC Boys film is great. I'm sure it's
that
awesome.
That was a good documentary, yeah. But when is he going to do that? Yeah, he needs to get on
like,
that.
Dude, like, Spike, buddy, you got to come back. You got to come back. And Joaquin, I mean, this performance is magical, and the entire ensemble is incredible. I love Amy Adams in this. I think this was the far superior Amy Adams film from 2013. American Hustle, not my favorite film. Pushing aside the person that made it, it's just not one of my favorites from Amy's catalog. Rooney's great. This is obviously where they first met. And then later on, they've collaborated. They've collaborated so many times. It's insane. And now they're together. They have a kid. It's a beautiful relationship. It's one of my favorite relationships in Hollywood. I love that you brought up Chris Pratt. Because when I rewatched the film the other night, I forgot that he was honestly in this. Because
that's what you kind of do while you're watching it. That's what I was saying earlier. You kind of forget he's in it, and then he'll pop back up, and you'll be like, "Oh yeah."
It's just crazy because like from 2011 to 2013, he was in three back-to-back Best Picture nominees: Moneyball, Zero Dark Thirty, and this.
Oh yeah! Wow.
That's incredible. Chris, can you step out of the action films and go back to doing something like this? I think you have a lot of potential, buddy. So
that's like the thing where Zoe Saldana was in all the movies that made like over $2 billion or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, Avatar, Guardians, like yeah. Star Trek, like Zoe. Come on, girl. Like, come on, get back into the game. But no, I mean her everything you said, I mean you nailed it, but this movie breaks my heart. It makes me laugh, it makes me cry, it makes me smile. All the emotions, like you feel them throughout. The ending is absolutely beautiful. The imagery is some of the finest that I've ever seen. I love the music by Arcade Fire. I love the Moon Song. It's so good. And Scarlett Johansson's vocal work as Samantha is honestly it's some of the best acting she's ever done too.
Watch out now, that's one of my favorites.
I love ScarJo. She's one of my faves as well, but
might be a bit of a spoiler, but she was in my voice acting top five that we just did. I had Emma Sasek on for that, and I had to throw her out there, man. That was just such a good voice acting performance because it was clearly her, but it was like, no pun intended, but it was like almost like it didn't register with you. You kind of thought it was Siri or, you know, one of those AIs.
Do you know that she originally wasn't supposed to voice that character?
Yeah, but I can't remember who it was. Remind me.
Samantha Morton.
No, that's not what I was thinking. I was thinking there was another pretty prominent actress that was in the mix too.
Well, she was the one that was Yeah. Which I don't know how I would have felt about that. I do like Samantha Morton. She's good, but like I can't see her. I think Scarlett just brings this very elegant presence to the voice of Samantha, and I mean she really disappears in that role. I mean obviously we can't see her face, but voice acting is a very hard thing to pull off. It's a very difficult thing to pull off, and the fact that she was able to do it, I mean it's really incredible. And it's sad that the Academy doesn't recognize vocal performances. And I'm telling you, if they did have a category based around vocal performances, she 1,000% would have won for this. 1,000% would have won.
No doubt.
And again, she's one of my favorites, but this is one of the best performances she's ever given.
And you could look at like Jenny Slate this year for Marcel. I mean, no question.
I don't know how she pulled it off, but she really knocked it out of the park. I mean, this film really is a game changer, and there's a reason why people talk about it. There's a reason why cinephiles eat this up, and you know, people that just judge it from the concept and the trailer, you need to sit down and actually watch it and just see how it's put together and how it's crafted. It really is remarkable work. And the whole conversation between Theodore and Oh my God, what's her character's name? Catherine. When they're talking about everything that kind of went down with their relationship and everything. Oh my God. I mean, it's really incredible stuff, and I don't understand how Joaquin was not nominated for this. I'll never understand it. I'll never understand it. It's one of the best acting, one of the best performances he's ever given. And yeah, I mean, I could talk about her for hours. I love it so much. One of the best films of 2013. Not my personal favorite from that year, but definitely top three without a doubt. Without a doubt. Like, it's very high for me. I love this movie so much. I don't
Yeah,
even
great.
know what else I could say about it, honestly.
A great pick, man. It's an absolute. I love it too. I mean, as I said before, it's an absolute. It's like heartbreaking. It's funny. It's quirky. It kind of. And you're right. If people are reading it for face value, they're missing out because it's there's so much in there. It's not just the. You can't judge a book by its cover in this situation. Like. It's a movie that you really have to kind of get into, and using the book analogy, it's like you get to chapter two, chapter three, it starts to kind of like get a little juicy, you know? And this movie is so much more than it seems at face value, and I think everybody should give it a shot for sure.
It's so good. It's so good. Oh my God, I could talk about it forever. But if I talk about it anymore, I'm gonna start tearing up. So I think we should just move on and just recap our top five list before we get into the honorable mentions. So, Gerald, what is your list from 5 to 1?
My number five was Signs. My number four was Her. My number three was You Were Never Really Here. Number two was Walk the Line. And my number one was Gladiator.
And to recap my list, coming in at number 5 is Walk the Line, number 4 is The Master, number 3 is True Lovers, number 2 is Come On, Come On, and number 1 is Her. So that is our list. So let's talk about some of the films that didn't make a cut. Let's give a shout out to some of these honorable mentions. So what are some films that you want to give a shout out to that couldn't crack your list?
Well, you mentioned a couple of mine. I had Come On, Come On in my honorables. I had The Master in my honorables. Another Shyamalan film, The Village, which was kind of like that weird spot in his filmography where it was like okay, but you were still kind of like, what? And then after that, you're like, what? So it was kind of like good. It was some of the best Shyamalan-isms, but it was also kind of like a lot of head scratching, and there was way too many plot twists in the last, act and whatever. But I mean, I love the look of it. I love the aesthetic. I love the idea of it. And I just wish he had maybe done one or two less kind of like plot twisty things at the end of this movie, and it would have been much better for me. But I think Joaquin's great in it, along with some of the other performances in it, like Bryce Dallas Howard. She hasn't done a whole lot in her career where I've like kind of been like super impressed, but this one I really think is probably her best performance. So that one, and then the only other one I would have mentioned is kind of a weird one, but I just love it's a guilty pleasure for movie for me, and I just freaking love it. And he has kind of a smaller role in it, but it's a movie from the 90s. It's Gus Van Sant's To Die For, starring Nicole Kidman as this kind of like a TV journalist who just wants to be the best, but she's kind of a seductress. And Joaquin has as a kind of a lower role as Jimmy, this guy who kind of pines after her in the movie. And he's kind of a quirky side character, but I don't know. That movie came up recently on my program. We did our top five Nicole Kidman movies a while back, and I rewatched it for that. And I just remember him being kind of weird in it, kind of in the background, So, but that would have been it for my honorables.
So for me, I mean, there's so many to go through. Obviously, Gladiator, which you brought up. Signs, which you brought up. I do like The Village. I'm not in love with it, but I think he's great in it. I think he's fantastic. Hotel Rwanda, which is obviously the Don Cheadle showcase. I think he's so good in that as well. I think he does a really good job in that. Very underrated film that not a lot of people talk about. And I mean, my God, Don Cheadle really is. He's incredible in that film. He is fantastic. The other three James Gray, Joaquin collaborations, We Own the Night, The Yards, and The Immigrant. I love all three of those movies, and they all should be seen. please check them out. To the listeners, please watch them if you haven't already. In terms of other album mentions, You Were Never Really Here, which you brought up. And look, this is not necessarily a hot take, but it's not exactly the most popular take either. I do like Joker. I don't think it's the greatest thing that cinema has ever received. I do really love Joaquin in it. I do think he's fantastic in it. Do I think he should have won the Oscar for this? Not over Adam Driver for Marriage Story. Not over Adam Driver for Marriage Story. But it's not one of the worst Best Actor wins. In my opinion, it's not one of the worst. I genuinely do think he delivers a great performance. And it was cool seeing him in an IP film. It was cool seeing him do a role like this, considering that he's always been like, oh, I'm never going to join the comic book movie genre. There was a period where he was supposedly in talks to play Doctor Strange. I don't think that would have panned out. Even if they had cast him, I just don't think that would have worked out. I don't see him as that role. I think Cumberbatch right. playing that character is like perfect casting. But yeah, I have not seen To Die For. I really do want to check that out. That's been on my watch list for a very long time. Hopefully, like Nicole Kidman says, it's going to give me an indescribable feeling. It probably will. It sounds like it probably will. But yeah,
it's great. I mean, it's great 90s throwback.
I can't wait to watch it. I do like Gus Van Sant. He's very underrated. Those are my honorable mentions. But before we close out the show, we got to mention the films he has coming out. He's got 4 upcoming titles. That's a lot. And they're all with different filmmakers. They're all completely different films from one another. So obviously there's Beau Is Afraid, which comes out this week, and we're doing the episode in honor of that movie's release. I really like Ari Aster. Hereditary is one of my favorite horror films, not only of the past 10 years, it's one of my favorites in the entire genre. I think that film is a masterpiece across the board. I really love what it was saying, and I love the approach that it was given. And for it being the directorial debut, it's one of the strongest that I've ever seen. I also really enjoyed Midsommar, not as much as Hereditary, but I think it was a very solid follow-up to that. And from what I'm hearing about Beau Is Afraid, it is absolutely insane, but that's to be expected with Ari Aster. I cannot wait to go on this 3-hour odyssey and see Joaquin Phoenix bring this character to life. I'm so excited to see where it goes. I have no idea where it's going to go, but I cannot wait. Napoleon comes out at the end of this year. His reunion with Ridley Scott. This is a highly anticipated film. Apple is distributing it, but we're also getting a big theatrical release with this, and I think this could be a major awards player, depending on how it turns out. Ridley Scott is a filmmaker who has been very hit or miss these last couple of years, but when he hits, he really, really hits. Like, I mean, The Last Duel, I think, is some of the best work that he's ever done. And unfortunately, House of the Gucci is not one of the best works that he's done. But him doing a film on Napoleon Bonaparte and Joaquin Phoenix playing him, and also Vanessa Kirby's in this, I'm like, that's literally a great duo right there under the hands of a fantastic filmmaker. And the fact that Ridley Scott is in his mid-80s and making films that you wouldn't see people in their 80s make, I mean, that's just, that really inspires me so much. I'm just so inspired that he continues to pump out films, especially at the age that he's at, and I cannot wait to see how this film pans out. And then we have Joker 2, which is called Joker Folie à Deux. And look, obviously Joker was an incredibly polarizing film, but it was a box office success. It grossed $1 billion. It was nominated for 11 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. Joaquin obviously won the Academy Award for Best Actor for playing Arthur Fleck. I have no idea where this is going to go. There have been reports saying that is a musical of sorts. We have Lady Gaga coming in as Harley Quinn, which I think everybody on film Twitter is so excited for, because I mean, everybody loves Lady Gaga, and all the pictures that have come out from the sets, they're insane. And we have a whole year and a half until this movie comes out. They just wrapped filming at the time of this recording about a week ago, and I cannot wait to see what Todd Phillips and the crew have in store for this sequel. It's definitely one of my most anticipated films of 2024 for sure. And the last thing that he has lined up, which has not started filming yet, is a film that he will be doing called, I just had it loaded up, where'd it go? It is called The Island. It is a dramatic thriller, which will be co-starring Rooney Mara, and is from the director of Cold War, Paul Palakowski. I loved Cold War. I thought that film was incredible. And after I saw it, I'm like, I gotta see what this guy does next. And the fact that he's doing the film with Joaquin and Rooney, two of the best actors working today. Obviously, two actors that are together in real life. I mean, their chemistry is going to be palpable in this movie, and I cannot wait to see how it is utilized. I'm so excited for all four of these movies. And they're all different. They're literally all different. You have a horror movie. You have a psychological thriller. You got a straight-up drama. And then you have a historical film.
Right.
I love that Joaquin doesn't stick to one specific genre. He does all these different projects, and I really respect that about him. So in terms of all these movies, talk about your anticipation for each of them.
Yeah, I didn't know about the last one that you mentioned, so that was my first time hearing about that one. But the other three I'm heavily anticipating. Bo is Afraid, I'll probably get to see, you know, the week that the folks are hearing this episode. And one thing I know as a horror junkie is that Ari Aster likes to center his movies around grief, with Hereditary and with Midsommar. So I'm assuming there's going to be something that Bo is grief-stricken about in the movie, or at least some character must be. Ari Aster kind of takes that theme and builds the movie around it, and it turns into a bit of a psychological roller coaster in the other two films. So what I've read about Bo is Afraid, it's going to be that, but even worse. So I'm excited because I love Ari Aster. I think him and Jordan Peele and Robert Eggers and like those guys are like the new, they are the voice of horror right now. They're definitely kind of making their mark on the genre. And I think Ari Aster is one of the best working today. You know, it's funny, we were talking about Joker earlier because we were wondering if it was going to come up on the episode tonight. And I was not a huge fan of the first movie, truth be told. But, and I told you this earlier, I love the last act of that movie, like the last 20 to 30 minutes of that film when it kind of ramped up the violence and he kind of became the Joker, for lack of a better way to put it, and started kind of doing his mayhem thing and chaos thing. So, with that being said, if it kind of picks up the story where it left off, then you would almost immediately, by default, think that I'm going to like the sequel a lot better than I like the original. So I'm looking forward to that one, and I freaking love Lady Gaga. So seeing her in this role that's, from the stills and stuff that I've seen, looks like it's going to be a much different approach to Harley Quinn than we've ever seen before. Much more of a kind of neutral, grounded approach to the character, not the cartoonish version that we've seen before or the overly sexy versions that we've seen in the past. So I'm excited to see that, and I'm excited to see just let the acting kind of do its thing there, because she's Star is Born is one of my favorite movies ever. I mean, she's just a great actress. So
good.
And musician, but I love her. And then remind me, what was the – oh, Napoleon, we talked about already. So, yeah, I mean, Ridley Scott and Joaquin getting back together. I just did my Oscars predictions video actually yesterday. It went up on my YouTube, and it's in my top 10 that I think is going to get nominated for Best Picture. So – I have high hopes for it and high expectations, obviously, but I think it's going to be Ridley Scott kind of getting back to that Gladiator type of film where it's telling a true story with a powerhouse actor that can carry the subject matter, but still have that kind of almost like heroic, not superhero, but like heroic kind of aura surrounding it where it's just like thrilling to watch, and that's how I would categorize Gladiator. So I'm thinking that'll be similar for Napoleon, and I'm excited to see what Joaquin does in that role for sure. I think he could be looking at another Best Actor nom next year for that. So and then like I said, I had not even heard about the other one that you mentioned, but I'm excited for it because him and Rooney, when they get together, I mean, LFG, let's do it. I mean, they're on screen together, sharing scenes together, it's a special thing. So I'm looking forward to that one also.
Definitely, definitely. And to close out our thoughts on this episode, Joaquin Phoenix really will go down as one of the best actors, not only working today, but I really do believe that come a few years, he will go down as one of the best actors of all time. I will always be excited for whatever Joaquin does next. Even if the film does not sound like my cup of tea, he finds a way of always being in films that very much sound up my alley and definitely more interesting to me. I really do love him. I hope he continues to do what he does. Yeah, I mean, what else could I say? What else could I say about this man?
Nailed it.
Yeah, I mean, what else can you say about it? Like, what are your final thoughts on this guy?
I mean, no, final thoughts wise, I mean, I agree with everything you said, but and I kind of said at the top, but I just love how this dude is dedicated to the craft of acting, regardless of what the fanfare around the project might be. And I do really, really believe that. Like, you know, I think like a lot of actors, he probably prefers to work with filmmakers like Ridley Scott and like some of the others that he's worked, James Gray, and, you know, people that he's comfortable with that he knows will let him do his thing. But at the same time, you know, I was joking at the top when I said he would do a movie for like $100, but I feel like he's the kind of actor that would do that. Like, he would just be excited to tell a story through the character and through the screenplay. And there's just, I feel like they're kind of fading away, actors like that, where they don't at least let the business part of it kind of creep into their mind, you know? But I don't think Joaquin does that. I think he just looks at the story, at the character, and then he kind of goes, yeah, I could do something with that. You know, I could make that my own, you know? I mean, we're talking about the Joker, which is, I mean, let's be honest. The Joker is one of the most iconic characters in the history of pop culture. And he somehow took that and made it Joaquin's Joker. Like, that's a very distinguishable version of that character that's never been done before. And he could do it with something like the Joker, but he could also do it with something like Johnny from Come On, Come On, that, you know, is just this kind of vagabond guy who's, you know, interviewing kids and stuff. I mean, it's just like you mentioned it already. He just does so many different things. And every time he does it, he's putting his own Joaquin spin on it. And, you know, the movie world is much better off with this guy. I mean, he's one of the best.
Seriously, Gerald, it's been such a blast having you on tonight to talk about Joaquin Phoenix. Thank you so much for coming on. Seriously, I had such a great time talking to you about one of the best actors working today.
Same here, man. I'm a big fan of yours, and it was a blast to be here, and I appreciate the invite again. And if you do a Reese Witherspoon episode without me, brother, it's never going to be as fast as I unfollow somebody on Twitter. I mean, you've got to have me on for that.
Okay, right. Okay. I'm booking you for a Reese Witherspoon episode when that happens. Man. I'm already writing that down right now as we
please
speak. But no, really, I appreciate it. And where could the people find you online? Where could the people find your work?
Yeah, man. Well, I'll just direct them to my YouTube channel because that's what I'm really trying to promote as of right now. But they can also find the podcast there too anyway. So it's just youtube.com/2peasonapod. And that's T-W-O spelled out. That's also my Twitter handle, 2peasonapod. And like I said, the podcast is also available on YouTube also. So just head over there, subscribe if you're willing to do so. And I'm always doing, you know, award season videos and video versions of the podcast and a lot of other trailer reactions and fun stuff too. So that's where I would prefer people to find me. And thanks again for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Please go follow his work. Please go support Gerald and his wonderful content. You guys can follow me on all social medias at Brian Suffield. You guys could subscribe to the show on any podcast platform. We have a Twitter and Instagram, so you guys could stay up to date with what's going on in the film fragments world. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I really appreciate it. Stay tuned for more wonderful content coming your way. We have a lot of great guests, lots of great topics. Be on the lookout for that. And I will see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.